This is a special Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the Invest Talk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. They will be played and answered on an upcoming Invest Talk podcast.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I just wanted to give you a call. I started my Roth IRA and I wanted to invest into a Vanguard mutual fund. I have $3,000 in there to invest it per their minimum requirement. And I've been looking at, you know, certain mutual funds regarding their expense ratio, turnover rate, and looking for like a risk factor of probably 3 or 4 since I'm 22 just to get started. What's your thoughts on something that I should put my $3,000 into just to start my Roth IRA for this year? I appreciate your feedback. Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by risk factor of 3 or 4, I think you said. We don't use that scale, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or I'm not sure what scale you're looking at. So that, I think that's the big question is that moderate? Is it aggressive? Is it conservative? I'm not sure. The first thing I would say is, probably wouldn't set up at Vanguard. You can access Vanguard funds anywhere. You don't need to be at Vanguard. In fact, Vanguard is not a good place to hold assets. Their service is poor. Just historically, it's just not a good place. There's no need to hold your money. You should never really hold your money at any mutual fund company. It doesn't make sense. It kind of pigeonholes you into really those funds, those fund families. And usually the service isn't as good as, you know, say, you know, we use Schwab, but it could be Fidelity. It could be E-Trade, it could be, you know, a lot of other brokers that are out there that are going to be better. Not Robinhood, but, you know, a lot of those big brokers. And so that's the first thing. I would move your Roth to one of those other big brokers. Then you can invest in anything you want. Now, if you're relatively young, you know, what I would say is lean on the value side of the market. You know, there are value ETFs. Vanguard has a value ETF. So focus on something like that, because I do think value over the, you know, the medium to long term is going to continue to outperform. And if you can give me more color, you know, head over to Invest Talk and reach out to investtalk.com and reach out to us and give me a little more color on your risk profile, and then I can help you out a bit more. Thanks for the call.
Let's go to Roger in Palo Alto, who has a question. How can we help you today?
There are two opposing views I'd like your comment on about how long to hold an investment. One is that the correct time is forever. And the other is an observation that most companies will fade or disappear over time.
Yeah, no, that's certainly a good point. I think that generally speaking, when people say hold an investment forever, a good investment forever, that is predicated upon the idea that the reasons why you're holding it, its dominance, its economic moat, its growth, are still the same. Certainly if a company that you bought because it has an expansive ability to reach into a new market, grow, capture market share, it has products that are better than its competitors' products, it is more price competitive than its other competitors as well. If that's still the case, then there's no reason to sell it. Now, that doesn't mean you don't sell any of it. Certainly you can take profit. But holding on to something forever is certainly not the answer. But holding on to something so long as your investment thesis stands, I think, is a better way to think about it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Awesome. Have a wonderful day.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
I got a question about rollovers. I got about $100,000 invested in my 401k under T. Rowe Price, and I'm thinking about moving that money and rollover to an IRA. I have Fidelity. I'm trying to find out, would that be a better move to move that to an IRA? That money is actually invested in S&P 500 and small cap index, and just go ahead and move that to Fidelity or put that money to my new 401k, which is in Charles Schwab. I'm not really fond of the new funds that are available in the new 401k. So I was thinking maybe it's better. I'm better off using Fidelity instead. Let me know what you think. please call me back. I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
I love this call because it highlights one of the biggest mistakes that investors make all the time. They take their old 401k money and they roll it into their new 401k. I see it all the time, and it is one of the worst things you can do with your money. Because you're basically squandering this precious opportunity to roll that 401k into an IRA. Because now you have to wait again. You have to wait until you move jobs to roll that into an IRA. Absolutely, you should take this money and roll it into an IRA. Now you already have Fidelity. You know, if you want to keep everything at Fidelity, that's fine. You can do that as well. Now maybe you want to move to Schwab because now your new 401k is at Schwab, and then you can have everything at Schwab. That's something to think about as well. But no matter what, in an IRA, you're going to have a lot more freedom. And that freedom only happens when you transfer jobs or if you hit 59 and a half and you can do an in-service rollover, which I encourage everyone to do as well. Now, there are some benefits of a 401k from creditor protection, and you can take money out at 55 versus 59 and a half. So, you know, there's something to think about there. But in the worst case scenario, you just keep it at that old 401k and then it stays as a 401k and you invest that way. There's almost no scenario where you should take that old 401k and put it in the new 401k. Especially in your situation, you're not very happy with the investment options in that new 401k. So what are you going to go? Move all this money, this $100,000, into this new 401k that you're not happy with when you could roll it into an IRA and invest in anything you want effectively? So yeah, you kind of answered your own question, I think. But I love it because it is so important. If you get nothing out of this episode of Invest Talk, you should tell all your friends, all your family, scream it from the rooftops. Never roll your old 401k into your new 401k. It makes no sense in almost any scenario whatsoever. Can't think of one, really. So I hope that answered your question. Thanks for the call.
You are listening to an Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
This is a special Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the Invest Talk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for you on Social Security withdrawals. After listening to you, I've learned that if you can put off your taking Social Security until past your eligibility age, that you make about 8% per year by delaying it. So I'm clear on that. Question is, how is this impacted by whether you're working during that time frame when you delay Social Security? Does not working reduce the amount of gain that you get by delaying it? Or does working increase it? Does it make any difference whatsoever? It seems like it would have to, because you're working and you're contributing, that would have to increase your benefits. There's the question. How does working or not working impact
your delaying of Social Security and the increase that you get by delaying it. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Well, your intuition is correct. Yes, as long as you are working or paying into it and you continue to delay it all the way up until the age of 70, your Social Security, what's called PIA, will increase and your ultimate benefits will increase. Now, after 70, you start taking it, you're forced to take it at 70, then you know there's some other calculations and there's a lot of deferrals and things like that. But yeah, up until you take it, as long as you're working, you're paying into Social Security, that should add to your overall benefits. Thanks for the call. Great question.
Let's go to James in New York, who has a question about dividends.
Yeah, I was wondering if, from an annual savings perspective, if a person was going to save 10%, 15%, 20%, et cetera, of their annual income, would one consider dividend reinvestment as part of that percentage, whatever that may be?
Well, I think it's personal preference. I think that people have a little bit about this misconception, I would say, about dividends, though, right? Dividends are, in essence, just trading a future capital gain for current income. If you own a stock that's worth $100, it pays a $2 dividend. Theoretically, when it pays that $2 dividend, the stock should now be worth $98. Now, it doesn't exactly work out that way, but if you look at stocks, you will see that they drop generally when dividends are paid out. And that's because the cash is coming from the company, so it no longer has that on their balance sheet anymore. And so maybe if you were instead going to use those dividends for something else and you decide to reinvest them, you should consider them as savings. But in effect, when a dividend is paid to you, the value of what your holdings are once that dividend is in your account theoretically should essentially be the same. Now, markets have frictions. There are various reasons why that may or may not be true. But a lot of people think of dividend income as income that they wouldn't otherwise have. Whereas what it really is a distribution from a company that is now worth a little bit less now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. It does.
Thanks for the call.
Now, I hope you've been telling your friends and family about our podcast and the fact that it's available in video form over on our YouTube channel. And we get questions submitted over there as well. And let's tackle one of those now. Steven says, what are your thoughts on covered call ETFs such as QYLD, XYLD, and RYLD? Now, we get this question a lot, mainly because people are chasing yield. And you know what I say all the time, don't chase the yield. Okay, you have to understand where the yield is coming from and know that the yields ebb and flow. And there's certain risks that you're taking when you are chasing yield. Okay, so for example, RYLD, that is the Global X Russell 2000 covered call ETF, that is a 12% 12-month yield. But if you look at the performance, let's go over here, what you will see is that year to date, it's up 7%. Last year was only up 0.28%. 2022, it lost 13%. That is total return. Okay. That's not that good. Okay. Not very good at all. Especially when you compare it to the Russell 2000. And other parts of the market, it's not doing very well. And while I don't have a problem with a covered call ETF, a covered call strategy, we actually execute a covered call strategy. It's called our Equity Income Plus. It's done very well, risk adjusted, etc. And we like that idea of rolling options on a monthly basis and collecting premium. And over time, that tends to work out in the option seller's favor. However, it's all about the underlying assets. Because covered calls, it brings more premium in, but it doesn't prevent major losses. If you pick the wrong companies, then you could have big downside. This is why we usually only invest in companies that pay a dividend and then write covered calls on that, because the dividends kind of keep a ballast there and make it so they don't decline too dramatically, because that dividend yield is attractive to investors. And so it's really about the underlying quality of the portfolio that the covered calls are being sold against. And so don't be fooled by the yield. Don't be buying these because of the yield. You would want to buy one of these because you like the underlying index that it's following. Whether that's the NASDAQ, the S&P, the Russell 2000, whatever that is, that would be your first line of questioning. Then you say, okay, I want exposure to that index, but I want to lower my overall risk. And then this would be a way to do that. And that's really what covered calls are designed to do. Give you exposure to a particular sector or part of the market or portfolio of assets. Obviously, that's what we're doing for clients. And then lowering that overall risk by selling the covered calls. So these are not a panacea. They can be a part of a portfolio, but don't be buying them just because of that yield. Do not chase the yield.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. Listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Dean calling from Boston. Just looking to know a little bit more about options trading. I currently have a Lulu call option, and it is currently doing very well for me. It's exercise price $250. I'm wondering if I should sell a few days before earnings, because I know that typically the price will go down before the exercise date. Earnings is August 29th, exercise date is August 30th. And so I'm just wondering if I should sell before the earnings or if I should wait for earnings. Thanks for your answer and appreciate the program. So long.
So that's difficult to answer because that really depends on your investment thesis. If you think that they're going to have positive earnings beat, if you think the market is going to react positively, then you would want to hold up until earnings, right? And the reason why option prices fall as you approach the exercise date is because, especially for long-dated options, the largest store of value within options, the Greeks are what affects options, the delta of the option, the implied volatility of the option, but specifically the theta of the option, the time value of the option. And so as it gets closer to expiration, you have what's called theta decay. And so that huge chunk of value inherent to an option starts to decay day after day after day because there's less time for volatility to go up. There's less time for positive or negative stock price movements to happen to the stock. So I think it comes down to a question of why are you holding it? If you have a philosophy, if you have a thesis rather on this stock that you believe it will have positive earnings surprises, or it'll have better than expected growth, better than expected forecast, if you think the stock price will go up, then that may overwhelm the decay of theta. So I would say understanding what drives option pricing models is very complex, but keep in mind there is so much going on. But at the core of it is, if you think the stock price is going to be more at the time of expiration, then you should probably hold on. If not, I would sell.
A quick reminder, if there's a term that you hear mentioned on the program, but you're unclear about what it means or you have a question about it, we want you to ask. It's very likely that you're not the only one with that same question. 888-99-CHART.
I was wondering, for moving averages, which time frames you guys like to use, whether it's the 50-day, 100, or the 200. Thank you.
Well, on my charts, I have four. I have the 200, I have the 100, I have the 50, and I have the 20. Those are the most consistent moving averages that I see being used and therefore have the most predictive power. Also, every stock has, or index has, a moving average while they're in an uptrend or a downtrend that they tend to find resistance or support at. It's usually either the 50 or the 100 day, depending on how volatile the name is, how strong that uptrend is. And something else to consider too is not just that the moving averages are a support level or resistance level, but also look at the width between the moving averages. And that will give you a good sense of the trend, the longer term trend of the move. Like I said, whether it's up move or down move, you know, if moving averages are kind of bunched together and they're kind of sideways, well, you're in a more neutral type of environment. okay, for that particular name or that particular index. So those are the ones that I tend to use and keep on my charts. Thanks for the call.
Let's keep things on moving and head back to the InvestTalk listener bank.
I don't have a lot of time each day to study and dig in like I know is necessary to really understand. Your program has helped a lot, but my question is this, basically. If you were in the situation of not working in the field you do, in other words, if you were not a professional investment advisor and were limited on time, how would you pare it down? What are the very minimum basic things that you would want to study to understand before making a stock investment? I know there's a lot of factors, and you do this professionally. Thank you, and you have a great show. Keep it up.
Well, thank you for being a loyal listener. We appreciate that. And that's tough. That's really tough. Right? I think I go back to what Drunken Miller says, which is, and I could be getting the percentages wrong, but the general feeling and consensus and idea is the same. And that is a majority, right? 50, 60% of a stock's return is how is the whole market doing? Which leads you to believe that the most important aspect is understanding what themes are being driven globally. If you don't have as much time to dive into the minutiae of individual companies, well, you need to understand what factors are shaping the political and economic landscape and how that might affect the market positively and negatively. The next largest slice, probably another 20, 30%, is the sector. Most of the market is going to appreciate together, but those things that are driving on a more micro scale within the larger picture are what's going to help various sectors, right? How cheap is it to raise capital? Are people looking for bond proxies because bonds are falling and they're looking for income? Is that going to shift it towards utilities? What is the path of interest rates? How does that affect real estate? All of these things are going to primarily drive sectors together, meaning that 80, 90% of a stock's return isn't even about that individual company. And then when you have all that time on your hands, then you dive into that individual company basis. What companies have really strong moats? What companies have products that are difficult to replicate and you can't really differentiate from on price or quality, right? That's the core of what's going to drive a business. Yes, its balance sheet is incredibly important. Is it levering itself too much? What is going on fundamentally with the company is important. But generally, if you have a well-run company, the ones that are going to do the best are the ones that have products that are not easy to duplicate, that are not easy to replicate, that are not easy to beat, where there aren't really those threats. Those economic moats are what you're really looking for in terms of those individual companies. But you know what? You got to start at the top. You got to understand what's going on with the world and how that is going to drive markets forward.
This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
This is a special InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
I have a question about stock splits and general idea. Is it a good idea to purchase companies that are going into stock splits that are already on my watch list? Because as I understand, the general trend is that stocks also often spike after the split shortly thereafter. So if I'm already interested in the stock and I've kind of been following it, looking for a good entry point, and I just want to kind of find out for some of the stocks if it's a good choice, I guess, to buy them with the intent maybe of unloading them after a bump in the stock split, maybe keeping half and then unloading the other half. All right. Thank you for your help.
So a stock split, let's tackle this from the most basic part of the question first. A stock split is essentially when the number of shares outstanding increases for a company by some factor. So, you know, maybe you had 100 shares and shares were worth $10 a share and you go to a, you know, one for two split or two for one split. And now they're 200 shares and they're worth $5 a share. Now, if you do the math on that and you look at the market value of the company, nothing has changed. Stock splits are things that happen on paper where the only thing that happens is really the price of the stock changes either up or down, depending on if it's a split or a reverse split. So because nothing is changing, there's fundamentally nothing different about the company. Just because you are thinking about buying a company and the stock is splitting, the split itself shouldn't really be a reason for why you buy it. Now, it is true that sometimes Stock splits can benefit the stock in the short term. Why? Well, if a company is trading at $1,000 a share and they do a 10 for one and it's now trading at $100 a share, psychologically, some people go, oh, the stock's cheaper. You know, maybe some people didn't have the capital to buy shares and now they do. And so it is true that the volume, the liquidity in that name can increase. But the reality is that they've been studying it and it's mixed results, right? Like it does, at a certain point, it can increase liquidity, but those are noisy numbers. It could be that fundamentally there's something about the company from a macro environment, micro environment, that influences why it has had positive performance. And then so to say that a stock is splitting and therefore performance will be positive, well, it's not even clear that it's more likely than not that it'll be positive. So if a company is something that you are watching, just because there is a stock split, should not be a reason why it finally puts you over the edge. Because again, stock splits are just things that happen on paper. Nothing changes. I hope you've been telling all your friends and family members about our podcast now being available in video form over on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Just head over to YouTube and search InvestTalk with two T's. And this question from a Taylor Mickelson, a loyal viewer, says, REIT space. Initial reactions to the presidential election appears to have hit the REIT space hard, including IIPR and AMT. Do you see the election of Trump as a reason to avoid names in this space? I mean, this is a classic trade-off, right? You see, as I mentioned, bond yields rising, the anticipation that the interest rates going forward are going to be higher because of policy, right? Industrial policy, tax policy, things that may lead to a ramp up in inflation, but certainly would increase the borrowing financing cost of the government. And people who invest in the REIT space, what are they generally looking for? They're looking for yield. We saw this as rates were going up. What happened to the REIT space? Well, it didn't do as well because you can get more yield elsewhere. You can get more yield from the bond market. And so these things tend to move relative to each other. That's exactly what we saw. We've seen a little pareback in REITs. So again, you got to understand the dynamics of how asset classes generally move together, what is driving all of them in different directions. That helps you allocate your portfolio accordingly in a more diversified way.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk, but opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
And how should you deal with your risk tolerance? InvestTalk. To prevail, serious investors need a balanced combination of realistic market education and unbiased guidance. A unique weekday finance and investment program and podcast. Invest Talk.
This is Joel calling in from Maine. I love the show. I'll be listening for your answer.
Is your asset portfolio properly balanced? How can you better manage your 401k? How will economic events affect the real estate market? So many questions. The straightforward answers can help you focus on your drive for success. You can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
My name is John. I have a 457 through my employer. They don't match it or anything. I've just been invested into it myself. I have almost $400,000 in there, and it's been in a very safe haven. I've only been collecting about 2% interest on it for a number of years. I'm 70 years old. I'm retired from the NYPD. I have a pension. I just signed up for my Social Security at 70. I was wondering if it'd be worth it for me to roll this 457 over into a Roth IRA. You can answer that question. I'd really appreciate it. And thank you again. Bye-bye.
You know, I was actually talking to a client today about a Roth conversion, and the reasons why it was beneficial to them is one of the reasons why it can be beneficial to you as well, right? For those who don't know, 457, it's a retirement account for government employees. It's a government-sponsored retirement account. It's just like your 401ks or 403bs. And it has tax-deferred growth. And so the difference here is, unlike most retirement plans, there's no early withdrawal fee. You just pay the taxes on the growth. But like most retirement plans, there is a required minimum distribution, but there isn't in Roths. And so what it does is it gives you some of the flexibility to convert it to a Roth. Now, you have to keep in mind, there are some tax consequences, right? It is treated as income in the year that you are doing the conversion. And so if I heard you correctly, you're retired and maybe you're not taking Social Security yet. And if I got that wrong, apologies here, but I think that it could be beneficial, right? It's something that I also advise is having tax diversity, right? There are some reasons why you might want to have a taxable brokerage account for various assets, why you might want to have deferred growth, why you might want to have tax-free growth. And so having that diversity gives you optionality. And that's something you should always maintain. I honestly think that. But generally speaking, Roth conversions can be beneficial for the reasons that I listed. You just have to be careful because you don't want to push yourself into a higher tax bracket. So if this is a year where you're retired, you're not drawing any income, could be a good time to do it. But as always, might be a good idea to talk to a financial advisor. And if you're interested, maybe we can help you out over at KPP. Just head over to investdoc.com.
First of all, love the podcast. My name is Andy from Long Island. And I was wondering if you had any insight as to why the government put such a low contribution limit on simple IRAs at $17,000 a year or $13,500 for someone under 50 years old, as opposed to 401k, 403b, and so on. I'll be listening. Thank you.
Yeah, that is a good question. And there's a couple reasons. One is the limits exist broadly because you're getting a tax benefit, right? And there is a limit to which the government wants to limit its tax revenue such that you don't have all of this revenue safe in these tax-advantaged accounts. Another reason is they want to incentivize the use of 401k plans. Why? Well, 401k plans, honestly, have more structure and protection. They have fund options for unsophisticated investors. They have requirements of the plan sponsors. And they have more administrative oversight, right? They tend to be it tends to incentivize investors who are trying to save using accounts that have more, let's say, guardrails, given how important it is to save for retirement. And so that's why the government would typically prefer to steer savings into accounts that are more regulated, are safer for the everyday retail investor.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein.
And that volatility, go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART.
Let's move back to your questions from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. I was trying to reach out. I got a question, not exactly political, but it's kind of about tariffs. You know, I understand that when Trump placed tariffs, didn't the Biden administration kind of leave that intact? So I'm curious, are we concerned about more tariffs? I mean, trying to interrupt the market, possibly causing more inflation. And also, do you find that when we did have those tariffs in the past, do you think that that added to our inflation when we first started doing it? Because I always known that you know, our government's always advised, you know, tariffs are just bad, bad, bad. Don't do it. So looking for your feedback. Thanks.
Yeah. So I think you have to take a step back and realize not all tariffs are the same, right? The tariffs that were put in place and maintained in the first Trump administration through the Biden administration fall under the category of tariffs that I think I and most economists, most people within this industry would agree with, right? Tariffs are distortions of the market. They just are. They're putting some sort of constraint on what would otherwise be free trade. And so in order to distort this market, you should probably have a pretty good reason. And the reason for those tariffs was, well, national security reasons, right? What the purpose was for those is they were targeted tariffs to generally support the solar industry within the United States. It was a concern that China, having a lot of cheap, more advanced solar panels, electric vehicles, could flood the U.S. market and completely drown U.S. industries. And so that is in and of itself a national security concern. Now, yeah, you do take a little bit of inflation there, but sometimes it's give and take. There's cost and benefits. And so the tariffs that are being proposed, and we don't know what they'll be, but there was talk about a blanket tariff, right? That's different. Targeted tariffs are one thing, blanket tariffs are different. And so if you're putting a tariff on all imported goods, which was the campaign proposal, we don't know if that's what it'll end up being, but that's what we're talking about here. If you put a tariff on all goods, right? Say it costs me $10 to make a pair of shoes, I'm selling it for $20. If it costs me $15 now to buy those input goods to make those shoes, I'm not still going to charge $20, right? The consumer is the one who eventually pays that. That's what happens with not just tariffs, but any general distortion of the market. That's just common sense economics. And so, yes, tariffs are, though not a driver of what people consider to be inflation, as in supply chain pressures, cost pull, demand push inflation, but they still do make costs higher and tampen down overall consumer demand levels. And that's why most economists are like, oh, well, unless you have a really good reason, you shouldn't put on tariffs. Who knows? We'll see what the policy is going to be as we get more evidence of who's going to be put in place within his cabinet, and he draws more policy that is defined. We'll certainly see what is to come. But yes, to answer your question, blanket tariffs, especially on any imports, blanket tariffs tend to be inflationary. So there is a little bit of a concern there.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Good morning, InvestTalk. I have a question on running a covered call strategy. I currently have been running a covered call strategy on ticker DRIM, Primoris. After the election, the stock just shot up. I'm at a point where I don't really want to roll it just because looks expensive to do so. And I was wondering, could I just buy 100 more shares or however many shares and let that option get assigned? And then, you know, my brokerage would just know to take the higher price shares or call the higher price shares away. So that way I could keep my lower cost basis shares and avoid more capital gains tax. Really, I'm just looking to see if there's a way to do that to avoid extra taxes, or if you think it would be advisable just to roll that option into the next month. I'll let you on the show. Thanks, guys.
Well, if you keep the same strike and you want to roll it into the next month, you're going to get a credit for that. You're going to make a little bit of money on that. So if you don't really want to sell it, that's probably the best way to go about it, is to just roll it out another month or two. And now what you talked about is one way to do it as well, right? Buy the 100 shares of the underlying and tell your broker that you want last in, first out. So when you're looking, when settings in your brokerage account, you can usually it's set to first in, first out, meaning the first lot that you bought, say you bought this company over a year ago for 100 shares, that is your first purchase, first in, first out. And then if you bought 100 today or tomorrow, then that would be the last lot, okay? And you can set it to sell the last lot versus the first lot. So that is one way to do it. What I would do, I just roll it out. Same strike, you'll get a credit. You don't want to sell it, right? So trigger that capital gains. That's the way I would handle the situation.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Let's dip into the InvestTalk YouTube channel comment section questions. And this one came in from Corny Corey, both of those spelled with a K, and it's on foreign stocks. It says, I have very little exposure to foreign stocks, but I think in the coming months, it would be a good idea to start picking up some, specifically Chinese stocks. If Trump gets his way with the tariff increases, then China is going to be making a boatload of money from the U.S. Okay, so let's dissect this. So if the U.S. imposes tariffs on China, then the cost is pushed on to importers, so U.S. companies and then U.S. consumers. So China isn't going to make any money from the U.S. if the U.S. imposes tariffs. So that's, I'm not sure about that. But let's talk about Chinese stocks broadly. The Chinese economy is in a weaker position than it was in the last time there were trade tensions, right? That's why I think that even if we were to impose tariffs on China, they would be in less of a position to retaliate in the same way that they did before. If you recall, in 2017, 2018, when we imposed tariffs, it did cause a cost to farmers, right? The government ended up paying $28 or $30 billion to bail out some farmers because of it. But I don't think that given the economic position that China is in right now and how fragile their economy is, that they can really fight back as much as they could back then. Now, another thing here is it's important to note that one of the campaign promises of the U.S. House candidates was to remove most favored nation trading partner status with China, right? That could also affect the Chinese market. I think I read a story about them talking about how to go through with that early in the next congressional session. And so I have been of the opinion for a while now that investing internationally is a good idea, but that the Chinese market just didn't look as attractive to me as it has to other people. I think given the election outcome, I tend to hold that position even further. So should you be getting exposure to foreign stocks? Yes. I do not think China is the route to go down, at least at this time, until we get some clarity on, well, a whole lot of things.
Got a question for Justin or Luke?
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds.
You're the best person to ask it.
Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
The symbol is UNIT. Wondering what you thought about this REIT, if it would be a good time to get in.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
So I was thinking, is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR. If you could run that down for me.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's get to another question from our InvestTalk YouTube question bank. This one says, when you talk about how much debt a company has, you rattle out a number super quick. The number you say never matches any of the numbers I see when I'm looking at a company's balance sheet. Are you listing the company's entire debt, including long-term debt? What does the number you provide include? How up-to-date is your data on average? Bonus question, if you have time, when you name the cash they have, are you listing all their cash or cash and cash equivalents? So on the debt picture, what we're looking at is the long-term and short-term debt of a company aggregated. I'll typically give a year where I see that debt figure. And then what we have is not just year-end in terms of December, not their fiscal year, but also their most quarterly number. That all comes directly from FactSet. So listen in to when I say what year it's from, or if I say it's their most recent quarter, and that'll give you a hint on what number we're talking about. Now, in terms of your bonus questions, when we say cash and short-term investments. And cash and short-term investments could include money market funds, it could include cash equivalents. And so that kind of gives you a better picture of what cash is available within a business.
Now, from time to time, we also receive InvestTalk questions via email. And here's one that came in from Big G, North Carolina. It says, should I buy oil, gas, and hard assets? Got a lot of our IRA in cash, money market. I was thinking about gas pipeline producers, contractors, as natural gas is a clean energy source. What is your recommendation? Yeah, we love those businesses. We've owned one of them for a long period of time in many of our investment accounts or strategies. And it got a bump, a big bump during post the election. One went from mid-90s all the way to about 110 at the close today. So it's had a nice move. And I think those will be more durable, especially because, Trump's going to want to allow more drilling. Doesn't mean necessarily it's going to happen, but there will still continue to be gas flowing because we need to power our AI data centers and cloud data centers, etc. And obviously Trump is not against oil and gas. So I think that space is a good place to invest in for the long term.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.